I'm Paul Ingalls, and this is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the fine jazz players with ties to New Mexico, like drummer Pete Amahl. For over 30 years, drummer Pete Amahl has lived in New Mexico, much of that time in out-of-the-way rural spaces. But he was born in the thick of the East Coast, Fall River, Massachusetts, not far from Providence, Rhode Island. He remembers first hearing jazz music when his older brother started tuning it in on the radio in their shared bedroom from stations in New York City. And not long after, Pete started playing the snare drum in a Portuguese marching band that his dad put together in their neighborhood.
But you know what? There were a lot of great players in that band. One of them was Joe Raposa, and Joe was a good friend of mine. He wrote the music for Sesame Street the first 7 years.
Oh, no kidding.
He did Not Easy Being Green. So
you came up in fast company.
I did. I had no idea. I was just a naive kid, not realizing that the tuba player was really a graduate of Juilliard, you know. But it was like that. And I started playing very young, and I played top 40, you know, that's what I played, pop music, whatever. At that time, there was a club scene, and by the time I was 15 years old, I was already working four nights a week and perhaps making more than my parents, you know.
Yeah, and you were still doing your homework and getting to school every morning?
I didn't do much.
Oh, okay, all right.
I played a lot, but didn't do much homework, I must admit. Yeah. So anyway, and also I was close to Newport, Rhode Island. And I think the first major hit in my life, we used to, you know, at 7 o'clock in the morning, if you wanted to work, you'd stand on a corner and pickup would come by and you'd jump in the back of it and go work on a farm, you know, and I'd go pick string beans. And I didn't do it much. I only did it a couple of times. But the second time, there was this Cuban on the side of me, and he said, "Man," he says, "let's just turn in our bushels and get out to Newport, 250, and you got a ticket." And that's what we did. I cashed in my bushel. It was 50 cents a bushel back then, and cashed my bushels in and hitched a ride with that gentleman and got out to Newport, Free Body Park, and bought my $2 ticket and hung out. And it changed my life. And I'll never forget that. I was a young kid. I think Elvis Presley was on that bill with Ray Charles.
You know my mother, and I died now. And my father, lived in Fort California.
Yeah, that was an incredible band. It floored me. It floored me to hear, you know, to hear things like Frenzy up against Nighttime Is the Right Time, and you hear Fat Ed open up that tune. Oh, Fat Ed Newman and Al Teagle was on drums, and it was just an incredible band. God, man, my hair still stands up. Ray knocked me out. In fact, I landed up at a tattoo parlor, and I talked Sailor Don into, that was his name, and he was well known amongst the Newport was a Navy base, a big Navy base, yeah. And there were sailors all over the world that had gotten tattoos from Sailor Don. And anyway, I talked him into putting a staff on my arm with ACC and writing Soul on top of it, and that was the impact that Ray Charles had.
She killed me money when I need now. Working the kind of when they need now.
You've been a sort of a venturesome and kind of versatile drum set player. Little country western, little jazz, little Cape Verdean music.
I really have loved it all.
Little rock, R&B,
yeah.
Soul.
Funk,
yeah,
and soul.
Funk, right, yeah,
yeah,
okay.
If I chose, I guess in it would start with jazz and then go to soul, because I really love soul music. You know, people like the OJs and the Spinners and stuff like that. Going further back, the Manhattans. I played for a while with a group called Tavaz. And they were pretty popular in the 70s. They had a big hit called Heaven Must Have Sent Me an Angel, as I recall. And then as I got into other things, even country, you know, like country I always viewed as being sort of hokey until I got into people like George Jones, and I just could hear the soul in it, you know. I could hear the man, you know, the white man's soul. It was really pretty amazing. And then even today, when you hear someone like Ralph Stanley, and, you know, if he can still stand up for a chorus, man, it just, it really touches on something, you know. The man must have had some lonely nights, you know.
To put jazz at the top of your list of sort of musical references, I mean, who were the cats that really made the music sing for you?
Well, I think the first guy that came at me melodically was Max Roach. But Max didn't strike a chord with me. It wasn't like, I mean, I loved him, and I appreciated him more than anyone else at that time. But the man that really just really opened me up, like as far as the quartet that actually opened me up, where I just said, you know, this is it, this is what I hear. And that was really Train and Elvin, Jimmy Garrison, McCoy Tyner, when Davis was with him. But that was the quartet that really opened me up. That just whacked me, you know. That's when I got the passion and the color. That's when I started to see the colors and how I could see how a cymbal would set up a sheet of sound, and how toms were melody. They weren't, you know, they weren't a talking device, man. It was melody. You know, pitch and tone, and how snare drum was a attack, you know. It's like crack, you know. It's a punch or a jab. It isn't, the resonance isn't there that, you know, the toms have. Anyway, so that's what the thing was. That Train's group with Elvin, the whole thing was it. And then if I had to pick one drummer all the way around that I would go with, it would be Elvin. But Roger Humphreys, with Horace Silver, you know, Horace being, he was a part, his father was Cape Verdean. The thing that really influenced me was this African Queen thing, because Roger Humphreys played a solo on it, and it was just so melodic, you know, just so melodic. And it's not dark like Elvin, you know, that's the thing. But it's off, you know, it's off the toms and has all, like, it has plenty of color. It's just on the brighter side of things.
This is from Horace Silver's Cape Verde Blues?
I would say it was the late 60s.
Okay, all right, so.
I would say that.
About 40 years ago. Let's check it out. I've associated you pretty closely with a lot of very interesting fellows, both locally and nationally.
I have, yeah.
Eddie Harris and Richie Cole.
Eddie Harris.
Mose Allison.
Right. Mose. I played with, I don't know, at least two or three dozen times. I was trying to bring, I was a single parent, and I was trying to bring people through is what I was trying to do any way I could,
Okay.
I came through here with Barney Kessel and...
Oh, that's right. That was the first time I heard Barney.
Yeah.
Actually, you played with a lot of really fine guitar players over the years.
I did, yeah. I've been very fortunate in that way. I've been playing with Junior Brown, as you know, the last, But
what's that all about?
I met Junior when he was a young man. I met him when he was 20 years old in Cerritos. And I had met a, when I was playing at the Ramada Inn, I met a celloist that was playing with Mason Williams. He was on that Classical Gas album. And Hugh Hazelrig, and he mentioned to me a young guitar player that was hanging out in Cerritos that was a couple of blocks away from where I was. So I walked over with a set of brushes, and it was a broken-down adobe, and had a little trailer aside, and he was actually living inside the trailer. I asked him if he played any jazz, and he said, not really, He said, but he thought he knew Chinatown. And so,
okay.
That was the introduction, and... sometime later, we played together. He'd put together a band, and I'd play with him. And he had a great band. He had Leroy Brandon, who was an incredible pedal steel guitarist, and who played incredible jazz. I once read an interview with Cannonball Adderley, and he thought that the pedal steel might be the next jazz instrument because the chords were so open. These huge chords. And Leroy had that going, man. He really could play. But anyway, I'd play on and off with Junior, and then he left town and tried to get a career started. And he'd come back and hire me, and I'd do a few things, and then he'd go away. And then I didn't see him for many years, perhaps 15 years or so. And I asked him if he'd come to Cerritos and play a fiesta, because Cerritos got a small grant to have fiestas. And he was gracious, and I said he'd do it for an airplane and a plane ticket and a hotel room, And, which he did, and we reconnected at that time. And a few months later, he called me up and said, "Your youngest daughter's left the house. Will you want to come out?" So I jumped on, and it's I just play a snare drum and a ride cymbal and brushes, mostly brushes, and. He's great. He features me once a night. I take a solo once a night. And it's been good.
So another player that you had a long time association with here in New Mexico was the late Richard Allen, the vocalist who, as you well know, lived up in Taos for many years.
Right. I do know that the first time I met him, I liked him, and when I heard him, I loved him. And even today, when I hear his voice, he's amongst the great, I put him, amongst Johnny Hartman. His voice is truly a gift, just a great voice. And he was also a great singer. If you listen to how he phrases and the clarity of his voice and the subtlety to it all, it's, I'll tell you, this CD remains one of my favorites, to be honest with you. There's good stuff on it.
What of a morning that brings the day so gently and fills the leaves with memories of love lost long ago? I still recall you in all those early hours, as though I were there once more to share a love lost long ago. Crassness of youth, concluding only half of the truth, exuding only one small percent of what I really felt for you. And then one morning that brought the day so gently, we set apart things of the heart and lost love long ago.
I guess I could tell people that the band here is some guy named Pete Amahl on drums, and John Bell's a guy on bass, Doug Lawrence on tenor and flute, Bob Fox piano, Richard Allen, a vocalist.
I am truly grateful for the opportunities I've had to play with these people. It's like a good lady, you know. No matter how it ends, you know, the good was good. You know,
well, it's not over yet.
No, I'm looking forward to it. In fact, I'm actually looking forward to it. I figured another year, and I want to come off the hill like reincarnate Sun Ra. You know,
okay.
You know, it's a different place in your life. You know, when you get to where I'm at, it's a different place. I can get up there and grow good food and think clear and put some time into.
So this move out of the urban ghetto of Cerrillos and up into the mountains has really,
in the heights,
yeah, up into the high ground has worked well for you, huh?
Oh yeah, very well. Yeah, I've always been that sort. You know, some people can't live alone. I can live alone as long as I'm surrounded by beauty, and my environment is very important to me. It's always been that way. You know, it was like one of the, you know, I spent the first year, 11 years of my life touring, and I got to a place where I realized that I didn't have my own life, you know, and where I found that life was on a cranberry bog up the Cape and living in a lean-to by myself. And I had my first experiences with nature and talking to God, and then my chops were all up because I had done so much work that it was all together. Everything had come together, and then I realized what the mix was. You know, it's all of it. It's all of it. You can't play happy if you're not a happy man. You know.
And you're a happy man.
I'm a happy man.
And are you playing up there, up on the hill?
I do.
You got a drum set there, and you work out a little bit?
I got all kind of instruments there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do. I got all the percussive
instruments. And now you got all the toys to record up there, too, huh?
I do, yeah. Yep, and that's my
So you got any musical friends left, or are they all?
Well, you know, recently I connected with the Saul Charquette that I hadn't seen in 30 years or so, and he was an incredible tenor player, really, truly incredible. And one of the most sensitive, wonderful men I've ever known in my life as a person. And he picked up his horn again, and we walked into a studio, and we just played played free for an afternoon, and we recorded it and had a great time. It was wonderful. You know, it was just free, and whatever came to his mind, he would slip into, and I'd play around it and under it and over it, you know.
Pete Amahl on drums, Saul Charquette on sax, recorded at Pete's place in the East Mountains. Pete Amahl was interviewed by Roy Durfee, and you can hear much more at the website newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org for extended interviews, bios, and great photographs by Genevieve Russell. Our staff includes engineer Nola Daves-Moses and Carol Boss. Support from KUNM, the New Mexico Humanities Council, Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, and Good Radio Shows Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.